Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, happy Sunday. It's not good for one to be alone. Shalom, shalom, happy Sunday, welcome to the Abracadabra, Create What You Speak show. I'm Ilan Azulay, I'm your host. You're here, we are discovering different ways to reclaim our power I'm a host, I'm a spiritual mentor, a sound therapist, and almost everything comes through sound. And I want to start with a weekly and a daily reminder, the utterance and do commandment of love your friend, your neighbor, your partner, your gardener, your person on the street, in the same way that you express love to yourself. הריני מקבל על עצמי את מצוות עשה של ואהבת לרעך כמוך. I can sip a lake of you, your shores and your pebbles, the rustling of your waves and your light that flickers on little waves that embrace my shores with warmth, absorbed in the sand, in me. I can drink a river of you. I'll sail into the horizon of your soul. I'll dive into the depths of your heart, enveloping a coral, opening up to your colors, and my fins take me away into your depth. And there, in your depth, you've revealed yourself to me. Mother of pearl, covered with remains, and with the caressing of water, the remains will fall off with love, and you'll show your beauty to the world, and your light will soar above, fly and land on the shore. Feet soaked with light on a silenced shore. I can gulp an ocean of you and fall asleep on the sand by your side. ואהבת לרעך כמוך. The focus is first on us, on you, on yourself. There are three parts of this sentence, really, to love your neighbor as you express love to yourself. And I say it in express love to yourself because the translation from Hebrew to English is not quite, is literal rather than ideological for the most part. And so first is the concentration on ourselves. This week we have the Day of Love Tu Be'av, and that was Thursday, but this entire week is really focusing on, first of all, the love that we can find within ourselves, to ourselves, expressing it then outside to the world, to shine the beauty to the world. And so first is on us. And then really the question is, how can I love somebody in the same way that I love myself? It is to wish for the other person the best that we can wish for ourselves, the best of everything that we wish for us. Happiness, joy, prosperity, any of these places of synchronization, any of these things that you wish for yourself, I want to wish it for you and for everybody that you know, and to spread that, to spread the love. When we say spread the love, how can we spray? I mean, you know, if we had a sprinkly dust, we'll do that. That's really to the kindness, the compassion, the understanding, the acceptance. And So it is to express, to first of all, to be with us, to go deep inside, to go to these places where we don't want sometimes to go into. And what happens, we shove these, or we hide these places, or we mask them, And then so really what is happening is that muscle of emotion, if you will, or the muscle of attachment is not being worked on, and we keep it for so many years in a box and far away from the light, so it doesn't really shake the boat, right? Because everything is, sometimes when things are working well, we don't want to touch everything, or it appears to be working well. We don't want to touch these places that are many times taking us back, because we don't practice on how to be around them, how to be with them. We have a thank you for showing up. Thank you for being here. This is a wonderful experience to share this with you, to share thoughts, to share ideas, to share tools, how we can map our experiences, and through work with sound and understanding the power of words together, when we work whether in a group or privately, we look at how to map our experiences and how to find this place of center while we deal with everything else. Today we're having a wonderful show. We have the guest that I have today. She'll be calling in soon. April Young Bennett. And she's the author of Ask a Suffragist book series. She's a host of the Religious Feminism podcast and the writer for Exponent 2. If you're familiar with us, with that, stay. And if not, also stay, because it's going to be interesting. And the first book is Wisdom and Stories from America's First Feminists. And so I have, based on what we're doing here in women empowerment and self-empowerment, I am looking so forward to talking to April. And let's see, I think we have April on the line. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, April.
Hi.
Hi, wonderful. Thank you for calling, everybody. We have April Young Bennett on the line. And as I start saying, you are the author of the Ask the Suffragist book series. And the first book is about America's first feminists. And from what I can tell and read is that she began studying the lives of suffragists to inform her fight for gender equality within her modern-day patriarchal religious community. Did I say it? Did I put it right, April?
That's right. Yes, I am a Mormon, a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and it is a very patriarchal religion with only men allowed to hold the priesthood, which means only men are allowed to have the highest callings in the church, and to make the decisions about how the church is administered and what the theology is. And so I've been working with other activists to try and make our faith community more egalitarian. And that's what inspired me to start studying the lives of suffragists and learn more about what they did to bring equality within their communities.
So what triggered you to go all the way back? I mean, you felt this need, there was a trigger, you said that this was inspired you, and I wondered if there was also something personal that inspired you and pushed you to be in an advocacy place, to be advocate.
Yes. You know, for me, it wasn't any one thing. I think the need for equality is innate. It's something that we all have, and we all want to be more equal within our communities. And so there were lots of little things over the course of my life that led me to eventually become an activist. I think it probably started at age 12. That's when, within my faith community, that things really become unequal, because 12-year-old male children are given the priesthood, virtually all of them within our faith are given the priesthood at age 12, and they get to start doing ordinance work at that age. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, girls of my age, girls who are 12, they get nothing. they just watch.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it started, and it kept going from there. A lot of times people ask me, and why on earth would you look back to the suffrage movement, go
exactly.
so far back in time
exactly.
to look for some ideas of who to learn from? But I actually had some experiences as an activist, that were very similar to experiences I knew about from history, from the suffrage movement. One really good example is I was leading an activist group. There were about 500 of us women that attempted to attend a male-only meeting within our church.
Okay.
And we marched to this male-only meeting, and one at a time we all asked for permission to enter, and we were all denied entry. But they did make a compromise. They said, here's what we'll do. We'll let you listen over the internet. We'll broadcast it. We'll let you listen on your phones. Huh. And so they did that. And
when
it
was
of
that?
It reminded me of something I knew about.
When was that?
That was in, let's see, I believe it was 2015.
Oh, wow. That's soon. That's recent. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It wasn't a long time ago. And they still do have this male-only meeting on a regular basis and don't allow women to attend. Although ever since our demonstration, now they do broadcast over the internet and let women listen but not participate.
So
that kind of reminded me of something I knew about from history. There was a time when Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, two great women's activists from history, tried to attend a meeting in London, and they weren't allowed to enter because they were women. And after a great deal of protest on their part, they said, okay, we'll make a compromise. Here's what we'll do. We'll let you sit in the balcony behind a curtain so you can't participate, but you can hear the meeting. And so here I was, almost 200 years later, having an experience very similar to one that I knew about from history. And so I wanted to know more about how these women handled very similar situations to what I was encountering.
And you find them similar, but similar in the idea of not receiving, let's put it for now, equality, and nothing that had to do with some kind of a divine intervention. Do you feel it was a pure segregation because of? I see it as fear of men really seeing what the power of a divine feminine is. Do you think it was just pure?
I think it might be. You know, I think it also goes back to tradition. Our church is fairly new. It began during the 19th century. And at that time, it was common to bar women from things. Women were barred from participating in many meetings in many churches. They were barred from voting. They couldn't participate in the government. They were barred from colleges and couldn't go to the university. And so at that time, it was just normal to ban women from participating. And I think that the people who started the church, they were just doing what seemed normal to them because it was what was happening everywhere in their community. And as time has gone on, those traditions that started, that really came about through the secular society, what was going on in secular society in the 19th century, they never changed within our church. And now people don't remember how they started.
That's right.
So in their heads, they think, oh, this is something that God instructed us to do way back when really, these are things that have been going on for a long time just because of inertia, because we haven't changed from what we were doing back in the 19th century when it was normal to bar women from things.
I see. Yeah, it's, you know, for example, at the age of 12 in Judaism, and a woman is developed naturally faster than men. A female also has a different and higher divine a power, a divine gifts, and 12 is really the time where a woman is having a bat mitzvah in Judaism. And I remember you having a rabbi on one of your podcasts. I saw that. So, where do you think the age of 12 came there? I mean, what was that also the time where girls at the age of 12 were starting to be promised to? Or promised for wedding with somebody potential? Is that when things are starting to look like that?
I think the age of 12 has to do more with, for us, that wasn't even the beginning of the church. It started happening several decades after the church began that they decided that they were going to ordain 12-year-old boys. And at that time, I think they were looking at that as they know that is about when puberty starts.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to get men more involved in the church and more committed to the church and have them, you know, just start getting into the work of God, hoping that that would help them to stay committed as they became adults. I don't think it was a bad idea to get children committed young and to give them age-appropriate responsibilities. But for some reason at this time, this was about the turn of the century, And it was a time when men were trying to assert their manliness. And one of the ways they decided to assert manliness within the church was to start excluding women from things they used to do and make them male-only responsibilities.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? Why do you think that, at least in your community or in your religion, why do you think that women are being barred? Because it is not obviously because of some kind of a religious or belief that is based on religion, for example, based on what you say. So why do you think that is? Is it because everybody else does
it? I think it was about this worry about men becoming lazy and men not feeling important and maybe not being as involved in the church. And they saw the best way to make men feel really involved was to put them in charge of things. But then they had to be in charge of someone. And yeah. So their solution was to exclude women and make them be in charge of women. Of course, this was terrible for women, but it kind of met their goals at the time of making men feel important so that they would be really involved and care about staying within the church.
Well, I mean, it's not only in the church. If you look at the history, it's been a complete patriarchal patriarchal society, especially here, and things are shifting. You can feel that. I know in 2012 when I started hearing in mainstream media talk about even yoga, you know, in Boston. I lived in Boston at the time, and NPR, first time they start talking about yoga and mindfulness, first time in mainstream radio. I thought, wow, really it's happening, because that's what also Kabbalah says, in this age things will shift. So there are shifts all across. Now, you're talking about bringing to equality, and within your, and there are a few questions. I mean, there are a lot of things that I wanted to to ask you, but you're in a patriarchal society. You want to stay, from what I gather, you want to stay and to remain a Mormon within your church. But then here's your church that its intention in segregating women does not come from some kind of a belief or religion or some kind of a divine excuse, let's put for the sake of an argument, but it comes from pure fear, ego, not understanding the other side, not understanding the cohesion of things rather than the isolation of things. So why are you there?
I don't only get frustrated by the patriarchy in my church. There are many things about the church that inspire me. It is within my church that I developed a keen sense of right and wrong and a desire for social justice that makes me who I am today. Mm-hmm. So there are many things I love about my faith community, mm-hmm. and I just want to make it better. And I feel like because I know my community so well and I know my faith so well, mm-hmm. this is the space where I'm most qualified to make a difference.
Mm. Well, that's wonderful. You want to see how... So how do you believe a woman is to be in any society, starting with yours? How it is a woman and a man, let's put it this way, because if we're just talking, I understand that men are the oppressors for this purpose. But how do you see the relationship between men and women?
I would love to see us get to a point where men don't have to be made to be more important than women or to supervise women or to be in charge of women in order to feel their own divine worth. Mm. I think it's a failing on the part of not only women, but men to be able to sense their own innate divine worth, that they feel the need to set up these artificial barriers to women to make themselves feel important.
Totally.
I think I would love for us to reach the point where we all feel our divine importance just inherently, and we don't need to be over other people. We can work cooperatively and we can feel that spirit within us without having to compete with each other.
That is wonderful, and this is what I really was hoping to hear, and I didn't have to push you to that. I mean, you said it beautifully, and that it is not, and this is what I do here, and what I do in the program and in the work, is to help to work with women and couples in order to reclaim their power, not power over somebody, you know, not power because somebody else is less, but their own divine power. And when things come together in harmony and everybody recognizes their own power, there is no need to assert one's right to exist, because it just exists.
Absolutely.
You know, so, but still, you know, it feels like, from what I read also, you know, you were also writing for the Exponent. Do you still write, by the way, after they?
I do, yes.
You still write? Okay. So we'll get to that. I'll get to that. But what I hear and what I read is that it's still almost trying to create the feminine entity within the patriarchal, rather than, as you describe, to be an independent entity coming together. Is this maybe because I guess maybe it will never change there. What do you think? I mean, it's like trying to
fit. Exponent community. Yeah, the Exponent community is a community for Mormon women, where we gather to talk about these issues and to talk about our faith and to support each other. And you're right, it is a segregated community in the sense that it's mostly women. And at the moment, I think that's needed for us to have a female community, because we are so blocked from within our church, from actually asserting our influence. And so this creates a separate space where we can't be overridden by somebody who says, well, I'm a male and I have priesthood authority, and so my will trumps yours, basically, which is what the case is right now at church.
Yeah.
So this creates a place where women can practice actually asserting their voices without being trumped by a man with that higher authority in our church. And I think it is a wonderful community and a great way for women to kind of explore their own thoughts without being stopped by this patriarchy from saying what they think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it is a step. It's a step on the way to having a fully integrated community where you don't have to worry about who's going to the patriarchy and who's going to be asserting their authority and blocking other people from speaking.
Yeah, no, I liked how you you used the sentence that were trumped down, you know, double-edged sword there. You know, it's so creating this. You know, there are several groups that I've encountered and that I've seen, and I mean, you're talking about a closed community, but really, just what you're describing is happening. I see this happening everywhere, at least that I'm that I see and where I read that it's happening similar to what you're describing, that is happening in your community, where there are groups of women, of women empowerment, that are led and run and inhabited by women only. And I understand that after, let's say, a shock, let's say, you know, like you get a shock, you get let's say something that happens every day, you get a shock, you have to take a few moments to recoup before you can continue, resume operations. So, you know, like if you knock your hand on the wall. So it's similar to for thousands of years, patriarchy, and now there is a crack, and now there is immersion, kind of coming out, rising from this crack of this patriarchy. These movements and women are coming up, and it feels like, okay, well, it's okay to have a period of time where there are groups of women that are on their own, for their own, and for them to empower. The question is, where does it end? Because if it ends, it doesn't have to end. But when we want to have peace, you know, we do peace not with our neighbors, but we do peace with those who have been in opposition to us could be for years. So I see this, that the healing cannot completely be healed if there is no meeting and coming together with that caused the traumatic effect, men, for example. So if there is no working together or healing together with men, then there is still no harmony. It's similar to what patriarchy did over the matriarchy, and now it's going to happen the other way. You know, so I understand that there has to be like a cooling off period, so to speak. And every woman goes through her own discovery in her own journey in her own time. So it's kind of like several generations is not going to end until everybody is integrated completely. But how do you feel about that? Do you feel that you have to have your situation in your community maybe requires you to have that because men are not ready maybe to.
Yeah.
But how do you see
that? That's one of the reasons why I like to look at history so much, because when you're looking at our community right now, we can only see what's going on at the present. But if you look at something similar that happened in the past, you can see how things evolved. So one thing that I think of when I think of what you're talking about is the abolition movement, the movement to abolish slavery. Mm-hmm. And when that started, the men who were in charge of this movement had no desire to incorporate women into the movement because they saw men as being the ones who were the change makers in society, the ones who get it, and women as the ones who stay home and take care of the kids while they're busy. And so they didn't want to involve women. And Lucretia Mott, a suffragist, she was one of the first women to just show up at one of these male-only meetings where they were planning what to do and asserted herself into the meeting. And they appreciated what she said because she was a smart woman and she said some really smart things that were really helpful to them. But then after the meeting was over, they said, you know, you don't belong here. This is for men. And so she started a female-only abolition society, in Pennsylvania. And it was different from the male society in that, first of all, it was much more integrated. They included black women. The male abolition society was mostly a bunch of white guys. And they involved black women, women who are closer to the problem than they were as white women. Huh. And so black and white women together were working together to abolish slavery in their own way and separate from the men because the men did not want to involve them. But over time, as they became very effective advocates for abolition, men took notice, and some of them said, we really should be involving these smart, brave women in our own abolition society, and eventually integration happened. Mm. So after they separated themselves and started asserting their own power as a separate group, that's when men took notice, and eventually the integration happened.
Mm. Well, I mean, there is an integration. There was what seemed to be an integration where Martha Hughes Cannon, she was elected to a state senate in late 1800s, right? So now, and now when I read that you were actually forced to remove 10 or 11 articles that you've written and to resign from the board of ordained women, right? I mean, so they're going backwards?
Yeah, that did happen to me.
So tell me, tell us about this.
Nothing really goes in a straightforward direction. I mean, we like to think of progress just marching on and we just get better and better. But we really see that progress happens in the sense of two steps forward, one step back. And you're kind of revolving in this circle that's slowly moving and spiraling towards progress, but it's never just a straight line like we'd like it to be. So yeah, you do. You see periods of pushback where they're like pushing back and trying to stop you. And then there's some progress where people are listening. Mm-hmm. And over time, it does move forward. But yeah, there are sometimes backwards. What you're talking about is an experience that happened to me.
Yes, please.
Where I was an activist, of course, working with ordained women. I was serving on their board as one of their leaders. And of course, I was writing for the Exponent community, a Mormon feminist community, writing about the need for us to ordain women within our faith community. And I got some severe pushback. And within our faith, we have some rules that you have to go through a male leader to get permission to attend weddings in our holy temples.
Till this day.
To this day, yes, we still do that.
Uh-huh.
They recently made some changes that make it a little bit easier, which I appreciate, through lots of activism on the part of different people within our faith. They have made some changes that make it possible for couples to get married outside the temple in a public wedding, inviting whomever they please, and then go finish with a religious ceremony afterwards in the temple that's private.
Mm-hmm.
But up until very recently, these marriage ceremonies would take place in temples, and you could try to invite whomever you pleased, but they wouldn't be allowed to come unless they got permission from a patriarchal leader. And my brother was about to get married, and my local ecclesiastical leader used this against me. He said he wouldn't allow me to be at my brother's wedding unless I, well, he had a very long list of things that he wanted to do to silence me,
yeah,
and that he wanted me to follow through in exchange for the opportunity to actually be there at my family wedding. Over time, I negotiated that down and whittled it down to two things that I actually ended up doing. One of them was censoring 11 posts from my website, taking 11 posts down that talked about the need for women to have the priesthood. And this is one of the things that's good about knowing the history.
Yes, for sure.
Because I do know the history, I know that censorship never works. I had a feeling that just because I was censored and temporarily took down these articles, that it wouldn't silence my voice, and it didn't.
It created more of a buzz, right?
Right.
Yeah, of course.
It brought publicity to these articles. People found them on Internet Archives. They started sharing them. I think more people read them than would have otherwise had to stay put. So censorship never works, but that was one of the things they had me do. And after you get this pass to attend temple weddings, it lasts for 2 years. Uh-huh. After that 2 years subsided, then I put all the articles back. So they're all back and they're there again. The other thing was that they wanted me to step down from my position as part of the Ordained Women Board. And that was painful for me. I really didn't want to do that. But in the end, I looked at it and I thought, you know, there are so many other activists within our organization that are ready to take on this leadership role and who are ready to step up to that plate. On the other hand, there's nobody who can replace me as my brother's sister.
That's right.
And this family ceremony, if I skipped it, there wouldn't be some other random person who could be there in the same way I could be there for him as his sister. And so I did end up doing that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that was something that I agreed to do for 2 years. Those 2 years are past. So all of those, you know, things that they placed on me, those aren't in place now, fortunately. So,
well, I'm glad, you know, I'm a true believer and that everything happens for a reason and for the good of our journey. Also, if it appears to be not good, at the end of the day, it comes down to the best of your journey. Do you feel that everything is a blessing? Do you feel that obstacles are here because they're here? I mean, how do you see that? Especially with the fight that you're having.
I don't see every obstacle as a blessing. I mean, in my mind, I would have preferred certainly for my ecclesiastical leaders not to have put that pressure on me and make me do those things. And I really think it was because of patriarchy that they did that, not because of any sort of inspiration. At the same time, I think that whatever situation is put in front of you, you can decide what to do with that and you can make the best of that and you can make it work for you.
That is the opportunity. That is the blessing, yeah.
Yeah, I did learn a lot of things from that experience, which have helped me as I've continued in my activist work.
So, you know, you're a spiritual woman. Yeah, I mean, you believe, I mean, I could feel. And when you talk about these things, for example, that the church removed a few obstacles and allowed people to attend if they receive permission and stuff like that. Why do you think they suddenly allow that? I mean, it goes back to the first point. It doesn't seem that the forbiddance of it came from a holy place and therefore also the release, quote unquote, of certain or of certain rules or certain laws also didn't come from an unholy place. It came from an egoic place. So if you are a believer and believing in the true divine, you know, how can you bring more in in a more in a more force, not forceful, but in a more strong position. I'm still not understanding why, if this is not truly godly, why are you there? I understand that you are coming from a place that, and I'm not here to question now what you're believing, I just really want to understand if there is this ungodly and unspiritual, let's use this word. It seems like it's continuing that place of women in the society by agreeing or by saying, okay, we'll compromise with this, we'll compromise with that. And it's more than just being a woman, it's a human being, it's a soul within a body. You know, it is more than that. And if there are so many unholy or really unauthentic actions and thoughts and prohibitions, and why to play into, okay, we agree to take this, why to agree to this? Is there fear of danger, of being kicked out, of something may happen to you? Is there something like that?
I think you're asking a few different questions in there, so I'm going to try to answer them one at a time.
Wonderful.
First of all, I do see the divine as working through flawed people. And I see that true in my faith. I see that in other faith communities where I see beautiful divine principles that are being translated by these imperfect people who are getting some of it right and some of it wrong. And I see that in myself too. Here I am, this flawed person, but I am trying to commune with the divine and I am trying to do God's will. Not that I'm always 100% sure what it is, because in the Bible we read about God's finger actually writing things on Moses' tablets, but I think in modern day life that just doesn't usually happen. Usually we have to figure it out. And so I see good and bad happening, and I think some of it comes through the divine and some of it is just us as flawed humans trying to figure out how to make things right. And I see myself as an important part of that, as one of these flawed people who is striving to help us to perfect ourselves, to help us to become better and to better interpret the divine. And I won't always do it perfectly, but I'm one of many people who's trying. And so thinking of myself as one part of this great big group of people who's working to make our world a better place and to bring us closer to the divine, I look at how can I effectively do that? There are people who, well, there are many people who at that time recommended to me, don't negotiate with terrorists, basically. You shouldn't put up with any of this. You should spit in that ecclesiastical leader's face and walk out. Just burn down your bridges and show them what's what. And that certainly is one thing I could have done, and it's something that other people have done in the past. But when I look at that, they, in kind of burning down those bridges and refusing to negotiate, they also made themselves less feasible activists for the things they care about, because they burned those bridges. Now those people wouldn't talk to them anymore. They wouldn't work with them. They wouldn't listen to them. They had kind of destroyed those lines of communication, and they weren't effective as activists going forward within that community. They may have been effective activists elsewhere, but within that community, had burned down those bridges. Well, and that's not something I wanted to do. I wanted to live to fight another day.
Yeah. So you're living for fighting?
I wanted to still be effective. I wanted to continue to be effective, continue to be effective activist.
Yeah.
And if I had just said, no, I'm not going to negotiate you, I'm not going to work with you in any way, I wouldn't have been able to do other things that I've done since, when I've been able to continue to keep those lines of communication open and continue to work with those ecclesiastical leaders to become more egalitarian.
So do you feel that Mormonism will change? I mean, if it will change, it won't be Mormonism anymore, right?
Oh, it is changing. And it always does change. That's almost part of one of the tenets of our religion, is that we believe in continuing revelation, that things will continue to change as we become more of a Zion community. So that's actually one of the things we believe in. And you do see that happening through our efforts as feminist activists. There have been very many important changes that have already happened within the church, and many of them just within the last few years. For example, very recently, they changed our temple ceremonies. Those are private ceremonies that we attend within the temple. And up until very recently, those ceremonies were much more affirming for men than they were towards women. They had women take on certain roles in those ceremonies, and men take on certain roles, and they'd make certain eternal promises to men and different ones for women that were not afraid. And it was a big problem. In our most sacred of spaces, women were treated in such an unequal way. And this is something that many people thought would never, ever change. And recently, they have changed the scripts for those ceremonies, and they are much more egalitarian today than they ever were in the past. And I believe that is because of the work of activists who have been striving for decades to make those changes, and I think more changes will come.
Yeah, well, I hope so. More for where we are going as on a global scale of improved or elevated vibration. What do you think? Before I go to this last question, I wanted to the reason I brought all this is I ask you the last few questions in one is, how do you feel about the Me Too movement? Do you feel that I believe it started with its pure intention, like most of everything that starts with ideologically pure ideological ideas. But I feel also that, and I don't know if you follow through that or how things are manifesting or how, all kind of groups and stuff like that are coming on top of, like, almost banking on that word or concept. But do you feel that it started right, it reached its need, it needs to continue, and is the way that it continues now, is it really healthy to bring the true essence out? Of the power of the divine, of the feminine, not on the expense of the other, but as a sole proprietor, so to speak.
I do think it's important for women to speak their truth and to talk about what has happened to them and to make it not a secret. One of the things I really love about the Me Too movement is part of the reason why these men who were sexually assaulting and sexually harassing women had so much power is because women were keeping their secrets for them. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of part of the whole process, is that men could do these despicable things and it would be hidden from the world. So they could keep on doing them and nothing would stop them,
yes,
because it was hidden.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think that the Me Too movement has addressed an important part of that link. They've broken the link of secrecy. So now it can't be secret anymore.
That's true.
If you are a man who wants to do these things to women, it is going to be known and people are going to find out about it, and you're not going to be able to keep your secrets any longer. And I think that is very important to changing the atmosphere in our workplaces, is that we're taking the shame away from women, because in the past okay, women need to be ashamed that this thing happened to them and they need to hide it.
That's right. That's a
secret. And we're saying the shame belongs with the perpetrator. If you did this, you should be ashamed, not the woman it happened to, not
yes.
the victim.
Yes,
so
yeah.
That is something that I feel is really good about the movement.
This is wonderful. And, it started with women, but this is not only women that are that were victims to men, but it's women that were victims to women, men that were victims to women, men that were victims to men. This is, so we can say that maybe 25% of it was revealed. And because everybody, almost not everybody, but from every aspect of society, whether it is a male, female, it's interchangeable. It is experienced on both sides, not just on women, but women actually, because of the other other issues that we talked about that have to do with women, it came out probably more forcefully and more directed at men. So it's everybody. It is not keeping the secret. Keeping a secret give power to the other. April, thank you. Thank you very much for joining. Thank you for this wonderful work, and I wish you blessing and light and joy and happiness in everything and all that you do, and to share the light with everybody else.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you. Thank you, April. Thank you for you being here, for everybody that has been watching and listening. The secrets, keeping a secret is empowering somebody else. Sometimes when we keep a secret, we feel safe because, okay, we're keeping it with us. Nobody else has to know. And as April pointed out, keeping a secret is because we many times are ashamed of something. And the shame really has nothing to do with you in this connotation, or in any connotation that is secretive and damaging to you. So this ties exactly to the point that I was talking earlier about going into these places where we don't want to touch, where we are afraid to touch, where we are ashamed to touch. I hope you have a wonderful week. This is Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. If you want to check out more about April, if you go to Facebook and you type April Young Bennett, with two N's and two T's, you will find her there, and from there are links to her websites. And yes, have a wonderful, wonderful week. And let's see, we are going to send you off with the love that is independent. Mati Kaspi, of course. Shalom, Lito'ot, have a wonderful week.
Create What You Speak with Ilan Azulay, only.